You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Her Money is proudly sponsored by Edelman Financial Engines. Edelman knows just how important it is to be prepared for whatever life hands you. Do you have a strategy to help protect your wealth and your family? Visit planefe.com/hermoney to learn more about what you need for your financial situation with a complimentary wealth checkup.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody. I wanted to jump in quickly before we get into the episode to thank all of you for taking our 2023 podcast and community survey. We read through all the feedback, every piece of it. And so we're now slowly starting to incorporate some changes based on what you said you wanted more of. But in order for this to work, I need a little bit more from you. Send us feedback. Send me feedback. You know that the email for the show is mailbag@hermoney.com. My email is jean@hermoney.com. And I'm telling you, send it my way. I'm going to read it. So as we slowly roll things in, you might start to hear more news about how the economy is impacting your money and what you can do about it. You might start hearing more mailbags featuring listeners like you. We're going to mix up the interviews a bit, some shorter ones with some longer ones, but we'll always bring the focus back to you and your money. And one more thing. In our survey, almost 90% of you said that you would recommend this show to friends. Do me a favor and do that. Pick an episode that you liked lately and ask a friend to listen, because that's how our community grows and thrives. So let's get into it with three pieces of timely financial news. First, big, and I mean big, changes are coming to the commissions that we have typically paid when we buy and sell homes. If you've ever sold a home, you know that in general, the seller is saddled with a 6% commission that's usually split between the firm that finds the buyer and the one that has the listing. Well, last November, a federal jury found that the National Association of Realtors, along with some large brokerage firms, had essentially conspired to keep those commissions up. In March, the National Association of Realtors reached a settlement in this case, but in that settlement, they've also agreed to scrap the rules that basically required all listings to include an upfront offer telling buying agents how much they'll be paid. So what's the upshot of all of this going to be? It's good. It means more money in your pocket. Americans pay about $100 billion in real estate commissions each and every year. According to Wall Street Journal reporting, analysts believe that number could fall by 30%, which means we're likely to see a lot of agents leaving the business as well. The producer price index came in and it was hotter than expected, up 0.6% month to month, up 1.6% year to year, ahead of estimates. So what is the PPI and what does this mean to you? The PPI is basically wholesale inflation. It's the cost of those goods that go into making and manufacturing the end products that you and I buy every day. And it's seen as an important indicator of what's coming down the pike in the CPI, which is consumer inflation. Because if makers of end products have to pay more for their parts and their ingredients, they're going to pass those price hikes right along to us. If you were wondering why markets were down at the end of the week, this is a very big reason for it. The stock markets have been up in part because they're anticipating that the Federal Reserve is going to lower interest rates multiple times later in 2024, and that'll make it cheaper for all those companies in the NASDAQ and the S&P and other exchanges to do business, in part because it will allow them to borrow money to fund their growth less expensively. These higher inflation numbers make the Fed want to sit on its hands for a little while longer. We'll keep you posted as we read the data that comes next. Finally, we've got a new study that shows us that feelings of financial insecurity in America are hitting record highs. According to research from Northwestern Mutual, 33% of adults say they do not feel financially secure, and that's up from 27% last year. It's also the highest level recorded since the survey launched back in 2009. Look, while the economy is growing and the markets have been trending up overall, despite what we saw at the end of last week, experts chalk these feelings up to persistent inflation as well. We are all paying more for a lot of things. So what can you do if you're feeling insecure? Try to find one or two places in your budget where you can just cut back a little and then funnel that money into savings. The upshot of doing this is that it shows you that although you don't have control over the capital E economy, when it comes to your own personal economy, there is a lot that you can do. That's it for the news of the week, and I'm excited to bring on a fantastic guest. This week, I am chatting with Charlotte Kells. She is the longtime personal finance columnist at The Cut, which is part of New York Magazine. And we're going to talk about how she found herself at the center of a scam, a really expensive scam that made her hand over all the money in her emergency account. We're going to talk about the red flags that you should look out for if you feel like you're being targeted by a scammer, and the very first thing you should do if you feel like you've been victim of one. Plus, in Mailbag today, we've got a question on the difference between an hourly financial advisor and one that charges a flat fee, and how to shop around for title insurance when you're buying a home. Here's my interview with Charlotte. Charlotte, welcome to the show. I have wanted to have you on for such a long time. I got to tell you, well before you wrote this story. So thank you for coming on today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to speak with you.
I want to say I think you're brave. I think you're really brave for telling it so publicly. For listeners who haven't read your story in New York Magazine or on The Cut, which honestly everybody should do right now, can you just back it up and tell us what happened?
Yeah, so the whole event took place over many hours, but it started out as a really innocuous seeming call from Amazon. I was working at home and I received a call on my cell phone. My caller ID said that it was Amazon, and I picked up, and it seemed like a pretty routine customer service phone call. Amazon does, in fact, make outgoing customer service phone calls, or at least they did at the time, saying that I had some unusual activity on my account and wanting to verify some transactions that had been made, which were indeed suspicious. I had not made them. It was for over $8,000 worth of electronics and other items that had been put on an account that had supposedly been opened under my name. I don't have a business account, but they said, because I immediately checked my account, I didn't see these charges, and they said it's under your business account. And I said, well, I don't have a business account. And they said, well, our records show that you have two, so we're going to flag them immediately because it seems like these were not opened by you. But they said, your personal information has clearly been compromised and used to open these accounts. And the woman who was telling me all of this was very professional. She sounded just like anyone that you would talk to on a customer service call like this. I think that we have all gotten these calls before, whether it's from your bank or your credit card, saying, hey, we've seen this charge for $4,000 worth of building materials ordered to Pennsylvania. Did you make this charge? And you say no, and they help you clear the charge and they send you a new card. That has also happened to me. But I think that the point is, this call, while worrisome because no one wants their identity stolen, seemed pretty routine. The woman was professional. This call is being recorded for quality assurances. She gave me her name. She gave me a case number. It seemed very above board. And I'd seen some headlines about Amazon scams recently. So I assumed that maybe this was sort of what was happening. I mentioned this. I was like, yeah, I've heard that you guys have been having some issues with this lately. She said, yeah, and that they were actually working with someone directly at the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, to investigate these identity theft instances because they had been becoming so prevalent. So she asked if it would be okay with me if she connected me to their liaison as part of their investigation. And that seemed a little weird to me, but I also know that scams are mushrooming and that authorities' response to them is evolving on a daily basis. So I don't know what's protocol and what's not protocol. It seemed odd, but it didn't seem entirely outside of the realm of possibility, especially given how quickly the sort of scam landscape is evolving. I said, okay. And she transferred me to someone who, you know, supposedly from the FTC, who also seemed very professional, gave me a badge number, and proceeded to tell me that I was under a much larger investigation that involved millions of dollars being wired overseas. There were arrest warrants out in my name in several states, had this really elaborate description of all of the crimes that had been committed under my identity. Most importantly, he knew my social security number, the names of my family members, and where I lived, and he told me that we were in danger. That made it pretty hard to hang up the phone. And what proceeded was several hours on the phone that ultimately culminated in me handing over the contents of my emergency fund, but that was the setup.
I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, everything that you just described. And I mean, I think I would have been in tears, right? I think I would have been completely shaking with fear and not likely to do anything except what they told me to do. So I understand sort of how you fell into this. I do want to get to the actual handing over of the money. But before we do that, I mean, what did you, in hindsight, sort of pick up on in terms of the psychological tactics that they were using and the fact that they had your social security number, that it is more widely available than we perhaps ever thought?
Yeah. So as part of reporting this story, I spoke to numerous experts who study scams and who look at data on scam victims. And it's actually quite common for people to have your social security number and other personal details. What happens is whenever there's a data breach, that information is usually scraped and sort of parsed and bundled together under your name. Then there are these sort of bundles of information about you. It could include your social security number, your address, the names of your family members, past addresses, your pets' names, your kids' names. And it is then often sold on the dark web sort of as these packages. And so when scammers have all that information, it's because they have been able to buy it.
I mean, that was one step that they took to get you to believe them. But in reading the story, it seemed like they took a series of small psychological steps to keep you engaged, to entice you to be more and more fearful, to believe the fact that you were in danger and your child was in danger. How did they do this? What sort of tactics did they use along the way? And how did that get you to the point where you handed over your emergency fund?
Yeah, it's a great question. And this was something that I was really focused on understanding as well. As I, you know, I replayed that day over and over and over in my head. You know, it felt like there had been psychological warfare waged on me and I had lost. Like, it was very clear that they really made it past my defenses. One really important one that everyone loves to think that they are immune to, but they are not, is just the illusion of authority. And from the start, saying, here's my badge number, I work with this organization. All of their numbers were, he gave me a callback number. It was a 202 Washington area code, conveying that standing of authority. I know more information than you do. I am part of a bigger system and you are in trouble and you need to listen to me. So authority is a really big one. Everyone likes to think that they are better at questioning authority than they actually are, but research shows that humans just really, especially when they're in a situation where they feel in over their head, they're very likely to trust and follow the directions of people who appear to be authority figures. The second one is isolation. And immediately they made it clear that I was not to tell anyone what was going on. And they told me that I was under surveillance and that my computer had potentially been hacked and that my home was being watched and that I couldn't tell anyone what was going on because, well, I was home alone, first of all, so I couldn't physically tell anyone, but that if I did anything to inform other people what was going on, that those people would be considered under suspicion in the investigation as well. And they needed to rule out all potential suspects. It sounds so crazy when I talk about it in retrospect. Like, it sounds like a spy movie or something. And I got caught up in this elaborate and ridiculous sounding scheme. But when you have someone who knows really intimate details about you and is threatening your family, you really lose some of that ability to think rationally and to sort of be like, well, if I'm on the phone with you, then why can't I text? Like, there are sort of questions that you ask where things don't totally line up, but you're also just so scared that you're, or at least I was, didn't want to rock the boat.
Right. Well, I understand that. I mean, I think the point in your story where your husband said to you, well, why didn't you just call me? I would have told you differently. I mean, did you think, I'm just going to text my husband? I'm just going to text my husband? Or was that like too frightening?
No, I actually did at first before they told me not to. And then they asked me if I had told anyone what was going on. And I said, yes, I texted my husband and he told me that I couldn't. And he gave me explicit instructions that I had to tell my husband that everything was fine and that I was taking care of it. So he was very, very instructive and specific about everything that I should and should not do. And there's actually a name for this tactic. It's called blocking the exits. And it's meant to isolate you and really make you feel like you have nowhere to turn. And it removes you farther and farther from the people who would give you a gut check and would sort of bring you back into your reality and bring you back into your ability to think rationally. And it moves you farther and farther into this sort of portrayal of reality and warped story that they are painting for you.
What's amazing is that it happened so quickly. How did you get from this being separated from all of your exits to going and getting the money out of the bank and handing it over?
Yes, I'll try to give you like the shortest version I can. So I was not asked for money at any point. They never asked me for banking information, personal information. You know, they had all my personal information, but what they told me was that in order to catch the people who had assumed my identity and were using it to carry out crimes, they were going to need to freeze all my assets and shut down my social security number. And they told me that my assets could be frozen for over a year. And so they told me that in order for me to protect my assets or have some savings during that time, that I would need to go to the bank and get it out in cash while I was on the phone with them and bring it home so that I would have it secured and it wouldn't be frozen as part of their investigation, which sounds crazy and implausible. And I was like, that sounds nuts. there's got to be a better way to do this. And they were like, this is the protocol. Either your assets are going to be frozen and you can't access them at all, or you can go and get cash out now and you will have that money. That will be the money that you have access to. At this point, there was no mention of the fact that I would need to give this money to anyone. He was also very direct about every step of the way. So it wasn't just like, you have to go to the bank and get out $50,000. It was, I'm going to need you to go to the bank. How far away is it? Where's the closest bank branch? Do you know what time they close? Like, it was very incremental. Everything was these small questions. So it was like these little steps that were taking me closer and closer to what he wanted me to do, which is also sort of textbook manipulation. $50,000 was what was in my savings account. It's my emergency savings. I am a freelance writer, so I've saved it up over the years. Whenever I get paid for a big project, just put some money in there. And because I'm a freelancer, I try to keep 6 to 12 months worth of expenses saved in there. That's what that was. And this really seemed like an emergency. So I went to the bank and he said that I had to stay on the phone with him the whole time because he needed to be tracking this money as part of the investigation. I thought the bank wouldn't let me take out that amount of money. I was surprised that they did, but there are no rules saying that they don't do that.
Right. How did they get you to hand it over?
So the man on the phone told me that one of his associates was going to be coming to my home. At this point, it was probably close to about 4 o'clock. Was going to be coming to my home to help me through next steps. And that was terrifying. I mean, I was really livid when he said that. I told him that was absolutely not okay. I told him that it was completely inappropriate and unsafe to have a stranger come to my home while I had $50,000 worth of cash there. And I told him that I still wasn't in, like, how could I believe that he was who he said he was? He made it very clear that questioning his directions was a huge risk to my safety. And he said, are you sure you really want to do that with a young child at home? And the answer was no. And so I told him that I would not let the person who was coming to our home come inside. So he said I could meet him outside, which may have been his intention the entire time. I have no idea. But I have heard that it is quite unusual to have physical contact with someone who is scamming you. So when I was waiting for the so-called officer to arrive, that he told me to put the cash in a box. He said that the person who was coming would help me secure it and that there was a particular protocol that we needed to follow. So he told me to get a box that would fit the cash, put it in, and label it with my name, social security number, address, the case number, his name, his badge number, all of this information, and then tape it closed. So I did that. And he said that the following day, I would get a new social security number, and then I would be able to, if I wanted to, open a new bank account and deposit that cash, and I could start using it. So the car pulled up. He said, I wasn't sure if the guy was going to get out or what was going to happen. I mean, at that moment, I felt so exposed and so terrified. My son and husband were home in our apartment upstairs. And the man on the phone said that the back window will open. Put the box into the car through the back window. Don't look at the driver. Don't talk to him. Just say thank you and then walk away. And that's what I did. And he said, tomorrow morning, you will receive a treasury check for that amount of money, and you'll be able to deposit it into your new account under your new social security number.
I know that many people and many women have come forward to tell you that you are not alone, that they have been scammed as well. And I'm not going to go into my story right now, but I have also been scammed and was fortunate to have a source who said, you're being scammed, don't do this, and was able to sort of pull back from the brink with a lot of money on the line. But there are many, many reasons why this happens. And there's a moment when you know. When did you know?
I knew when, because they stayed on the phone with me afterwards and said that they were working on getting my appointment at the Social Security office in the morning. And for the previous couple of hours, they had been very clear. They asked me what time I could go. I said, I could go at 9 a.m., but I couldn't go earlier and I had a meeting later and I had to go at 9 a.m. So he said he was working on shutting down my Social Security number and getting me an appointment so that I could go in and get a new one. And that was very comforting to me, the fact that I would have a meeting at an actual government office, which I had been asking for all day. And he said that we didn't have time. We had to move quickly. He was based in Arlington. He couldn't get up to New York. Like, I had to just do this over the phone. So the fact that he was saying I was going to have an appointment at the Social Security office was comforting to me. And hours went by when I was having dinner with my son. It was Halloween, so I took him trick-or-treating, and I still couldn't get off the phone. I had him on the phone in my pocket, which is so violating. And at one point, the call got disconnected, and I panicked and called back. And his associate, which was one of the there were four different people that I spoke to that day. One of them was a young woman who said that she was working with the team on this investigation. And she said that they were busy and they would call me back tomorrow. And that was the first time that they had been inconsistent in their story, that they had said something that was different from what they had told me previously. And I was like, what do you mean? I can't just not have a Social Security number like that. That just,
right.
Like, you can't do that. And she said, I'm so sorry. We're working it out. We'll call you in the morning. We'll call you at 10:30 tomorrow morning. And I was like, I already said that you can't call me at 10:30. I have a meeting. I won't be available. And she was like, I'm so sorry. We'll work it out. And suddenly it just all crystallized. It just started dissolving in front of my eyes. And I told her I was calling the police and I hung up.
Boy, and you did. And you filed an investigation. And this happens to people every single day.
Yeah, if you look at the numbers, there's an FTC report of the total amount of reported losses. So the actual amount is much higher. Reported losses to frauds and scams in the past couple of years, I mean, it's in the billions. And so if you think about that and just the sheer number of people who are affected by it, it's definitely millions of people.
We're going to take a very quick break, Charlotte, but when we come back, I want to know, I mean, you give personal finance advice, excellent personal finance advice in New York Magazine, in The Cut, all the time for a living. It is one of my must reads. I think you're terrific. I think your advice comes from the heart, but is also incredibly well reported and well thought out. I would love to know your advice for our listeners, what to do the next time this happens to them, because it isn't an if, it's absolutely a when. We'll be back in just a sec. Her Money is proudly sponsored by Edelman Financial Engines. Preparing for the unexpected tomorrow is what gives us the peace of mind to live a life of freedom today. Protecting your family is about so much more than just saving and investing. Having a conversation about your wealth is an important part of your protection puzzle. Explore your options with a complimentary wealth checkup. Visit planefe.com/hermoney or call 833-304-PLAN. We are talking with Charlotte Cowles from The Cut, personal finance columnist who was victim of a $50,000 scam that I've got to say, I suspect I might have fallen for as well. What do you want to tell people so that they are prepared for when this happens to them?
Yeah, I think it's really easy to think that you would spot a scam as it's happening or that you're immune. And I think one of the biggest things that's important to remember is you can't really prepare for how you're going to react when someone threatens your family. or finds that vulnerability or that weak point that you have. So I want to caution people against thinking that they can be fully immune to scams. That's really the first step. I don't think that what happened to me could happen to anybody, but I do think that there is a scam out there for everybody. And everyone has at least one vulnerability that can be exploited, unfortunately. There was a study that was done looking at people who were targeted by scammers and the difference between those who lost money in the scam and the difference between those who merely remained targets and managed to get out of the scam before they lost money. One of the most important factors was actually that the person, the target, had heard of a similar scam happening before. So that means actually that talking about scams, and I completely understand why victims don't want to talk about it. It's one of the most violating experiences that you can go through. And then to talk about it, even with your loved ones or just friends and family members, it can be really painful. It's still really painful for me to talk about. But by telling other people about it and coming forward and being transparent and having that vulnerability, you are actually saving other people from falling for the same thing. So I think that's really important to acknowledge. The second important factor is if you are interrupted by someone or if you talk to someone else who you trust. Most people who do not follow through with scams, who wind up not losing money, it's not because they were smarter or because they noticed a red flag and were like, oh, I outwitted the scammer. It's because they were interrupted by someone else who snapped them out of it and broke the spell and brought them back into their reality and made them realize, oh, this is not real. So those are really the two biggest factors. Having someone you trust, if anything, if there are red flags, anything, just reaching out to someone that you trust and doing that gut check. Also, just being aware of the scams that are happening. And then thirdly, if someone says they're calling from an institution of some kind, know that the phone numbers can be spoofed. Go look up the number of that institution and then call that institution and say, I would like to speak to so-and-so. I was just on the phone with them. And those are really the top three ways to try to stop a scam before it gets out of hand.
I love that advice. And from personal experience, I would just add, sometimes scams happen because there are promises on the other side that are fabulous, right? Sometimes it's not a, we're going to take this away from you, fear scam. It's an, oh my God, this could be great scam. And if you at any point in your gut start to believe that it is too good to be true or it could potentially not be true, it's not true, right? And just allow that voice in your head
intuition
to come through. Allow it to come through loud and clear. I think you have done the public an incredible service. Thank you for being here to talk about something that makes you uncomfortable and that you'd rather not talk about. I appreciate it. My listeners definitely appreciate it. And you have an open invitation to come back and talk about some project that you want to plug because you love it so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This has been really nice, and I appreciate your thoughtful questions.
Absolutely. And we will be right back with your mailbag. When it comes to retirement, women want different things. We want safety, security, stability, and the ability to live life on our own terms. One way we can achieve all of that is with an annuity. If you're not familiar with annuities, the concept is that essentially you take a chunk of money and turn it into a paycheck that you can start drawing on when you want to, next year or next decade. The ParityFlex multi-year guaranteed annuity available from Gainbridge offers security and flexibility at a time when women need it most, retirement. A guaranteed lifetime withdrawal benefit means you'll have a consistent income even when your account balance is zero. Plus, you'll get guaranteed returns at 5.95% APY. Who's with us? Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for important information. This is a paid endorsement.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
And we're back for Mailbag with my daughter, Julia Chatsky. Hey, Jules.
Hello, how are you?
I'm pretty good. This conversation with Charlotte Cowles, it was a little rattling because, as you know, I've been the victim of a scam. I didn't end up losing money, but I could have lost a lot of money. And I was thinking back to when you were in your first job, how you were the victim of a scam. And we think these things target just little old ladies, but in fact, they come for everybody. I mean, and the scam artist who went after you was really clever. Do you want to tell that story very quickly?
Yeah, I got an email. I was probably 6 months into my first job out of college. It was a small company, so I had a relationship with our CEO. It wasn't weird to get an email from him. And it was like 8:30 in the morning, and I got an email. Hey, Julia, can you do me a favor? Signed by his initials, which was how he wrote. So I responded like, hey, what's up? How can I help? And he said, before you come into the office, can you please get me, I think it was like $500 worth of Amex gift cards and send me pictures of them and I'll reimburse you when you get to the office. So I was like, sure, no problem. And I was on my way. And that's how I got scammed.
Because it was a scam artist who was writing you, you sent them pictures of the gift cards, and because they had the codes, they could then use that money.
Yep.
Yeah. Did you ever report that to the police or anything, or what did your boss say to do about it?
I don't remember what happened. I'm pretty sure my company reimbursed me. It was $500, so it could have been a lot worse, like $50,000, but $500 for a first-time employee, they were like, sweat off your back, check an email address next time, that sort of thing.
Yeah. It just is amazing how crafty these people are. They put it together that he was your boss because they went on LinkedIn and did a search on the company and knew exactly who worked there. We've got questions. Let's get into it.
Our first question today comes to us from a wondering mom. She writes, hello, I recently moved our retirement accounts from an online brokerage to a brokerage firm where I have a local financial advisor. She is transparent about her 1% fee, we have annual checkups, and I can email or call with questions. I recently read that it's better to have an hourly advisor. Our portfolio is about $800,000 right now, and retirement is 10 to 12 years away. We have our wills, trust account, and roadmap in place. How can I compare the options, and do you have any advice? Thank you, wondering mom.
I absolutely do. First of all, let me just say you're doing great. It is so nice to hear from somebody who has literally checked all the boxes. So the fact that in addition to saving and investing for retirement and clearly working with a plan in mind, you've got wills, you've got trusts, all of that is great. It's not that an hourly advisor is better than an advisor who charges a percentage of assets under management. It's really a question of whether you're getting what you're paying for. So with your portfolio at $800,000, 1% of that is $8,000. The average hourly financial advisor charges about $250 per hour. Now, fees can range, right? Depending on where you are, depending on the advisor that you choose. I've seen them from $150 an hour to $400 an hour. But let's just use that $250 mark. That would buy you 32 hours of time. The question I'd have is, do you feel like you're getting 32 hours worth of work? And have you asked your advisor how much time she spends on your account? I would start there. And I would start there knowing that if you were to start with a new hourly advisor, it is going to cost you a good 20-ish hours of time just to gear up, just to familiarize them with your financial situation and enable them to help you put a plan in place. You are looking at some sort of startup costs. Beyond that, would the fees be lower? Would they be higher? I don't know. You've got to talk to advisors about how complicated your financial situation happens to be. And then I would talk to your current advisor, if you're happy with her, about whether or not there is a point in time where that 1% fee comes down. 1% is pretty normal, but often as you accumulate more assets, the percentage rate is reduced. So once you cross the $1 million mark, say, does that 1% come down to 0.9% or 0.8%? It would be helpful to know what you're looking at. Finally, I just think it's worth noting that your comfort with your financial advisor is really important. The level of trust is really important. We hear a lot from people who are not comfortable with their advisors and who are shopping around for that reason. So I would say that's worth paying for as well. But I think if you're curious, these are the sorts of questions that you should be asking, starting with the advisor that you have right now.
So I guess for the younger listeners or someone like me, like, when should I see a financial advisor? Like, I know I'm taking the Her Money Finance Fix class right now, and so that's sort of giving me the tools. But at what point do I need, like, an advisor? Am I too young?
Not yet. You're not too young, but you're not at the point yet where you need somebody to help chart a path for you to retirement. You don't have enough money, quite frankly.
Cool.
You need an advisor when you have accumulated enough assets that you want to make sure you're on track to get where you want to go. And that can be seeing an advisor for help with a specific decision. Daddy and I saw an advisor for the first time when we were in our 30s, and we were trying to decide how much money we could spend on a house. And we didn't know based on the amount of money we had. So we saw an advisor then, we got some advice, and then we didn't see that advisor for a very long time and started using somebody regularly in my 40s as I was sort of charting my way forward. But very good question. And you know, what you're learning in Finance Fix is giving you the budgeting tools so that you can actually save enough for retirement and a house, at which point you'll start to need an advisor. Let's go to the next.
All right. Our next question comes to us from Lisa. She writes, "Hi, Jean. We are buying a condo and our lawyer advises us to purchase title insurance. Could anyone explain to us what this is and the pros and cons? I was not advised on this during my last purchase. Thanks, Lisa."
So great question, Lisa. When you take out a mortgage, any mortgage, whether it's on a house or a condo, you are required to purchase title insurance. It's part of your closing costs. And this title insurance policy is for the protection of the lender. It's basically insurance that guarantees that the title, the ability to transfer ownership of this house or condo, is clean, that you can buy it free and clear without problem. So before the home closes, the mortgage lender orders what's called a title search from a title company, and they search for public records that are related to the home to try to find any liens or other related issues that could prevent the sale of the home from going through. It costs anywhere from about a half of 1% to a little over 1% of the price of the purchase on the home, and it is something that you have to do. There's another kind of title insurance policy that is called owner's title insurance. And basically, it does the same thing for you that this does for the lender. Quite frankly, I've owned a number of homes. I've never purchased it. I don't really think that it's something that you have to purchase. I know that there is a lot of sort of fear-mongering going around lately. If you listen to the radio frequently, you'll hear of companies advising title protection services, which is kind of like identity protection for your title. That is not even title insurance. It's like an identity protection service, like a LifeLock for your title. And I wouldn't buy that either. I think it's a waste of money.
So it's not just for condos, it's for any type of house.
For any type of house where you are getting a loan, it is a requirement by the lender. And by the way, you should shop around for this.
It sounds like you're not like 100% sold on title insurance. Is there a different type of insurance that you recommend?
No, I'm not 100% sold. I'm saying you have to buy it for the mortgage lender. That's non-negotiable. You have to buy it when you are buying a home and you're borrowing money. What I'm not sold on is title insurance for the owner. I just wouldn't buy that. I don't really think that it's necessary. And when it comes to the title insurance that you buy for the mortgage lender, the last thing that I wanted to suggest was that she shop around, because in some states, it's a set price. But in other states, the price can really vary and you can save anywhere from a few hundred to a few thousand dollars by shopping around. Make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Jules. Thanks for sharing your scam story. It's Charlotte Cowles was pointing out what's really helpful when we talk about the fact that we're all vulnerable to these things. It just helps other people open their eyes. If you've got any other money-related questions, we'd love to hear from you. Send them our way by emailing us at mailbag@hermoney.com. And thanks so much for joining me today on Her Money. Thanks to Charlotte Cowles for sharing what to look out for if we think we're being targeted by scammers. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Edelman Financial Engines. Her Money is produced by Haley Pascalides. This show is mixed and mastered by CDM Sound Studios. Our music is provided by Video Helper, and our show comes to you through Megaphone. Check out our new podcast, How She Does It with Karen Feinerman, for intimate cocktail party style conversations with today's most talented female leaders. This podcast is also part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. You can find us and other shows like us at airwavemedia.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk soon.